and welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. In New York City, countries from around the world are debating the future of the nuclear nonproliferation regime. At the same time, the U.S. is pushing for still more sanctions against Iran because of its nuclear program. This has again led to accusations of discrimination and double standards against the weak by the strong. To discuss what's next for Iran, I'm joined by Mohammad Mirandi in Tehran. He's a professor at the University of Tehran. In Washington, we have Dipti Chobe. She's the deputy director of the Nuclear Policy Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And in Copenhagen, we cross to David Merkel of the Caspian and Black Sea Policy Forum. He was also a former deputy assistant secretary of state for European and Eurasian Affairs at the U.S. State Department in the Bush administration. And another member of our crosstalk team, Elena Hanga. All right, I'd like to go to Tehran first. Professor Mirandi, how did your president perform in the opening days of the NPT review conference in New York? Were you impressed with it? Do you think he sent the right messages? And is it going to change the fate that Iran is facing in dealing with the West?
Well, I think that in general, the perception here in Tehran is that it was a very strong speech. President Ahmadinejad has his fair share of critics and many supporters who are often divided about how he performs and how he speaks, both inside and outside Iran. But in this case, it seems pretty unanimous that people were very impressed with the speech, and they thought it was very focused. But I don't think that the general impression is the situation with the United States or its allies will get any better. The perception in Iran is that the United States is adamant for pursuing further hostile actions towards Iran and for increasing tensions in the Middle East and further sanctions. But in general, I think that the Iranians felt that it was a good opportunity for him to give a speech and for the Western media to be forced to reflect his comments, because the Western media is very biased against Iran. That is the general perception in Iran.
Okay, Dipti, if I can go to you in Washington, what is this conference all about? Is it about nonproliferation, it's official, dealing with the NPT treaty, or is it just to get rallied global support against Iran? Because in looking at the other speeches and at the other delegations, they actually wanted to listen to what the president had to say, while the Americans, the British, and the French just walked out. I mean, was that a good thing for the Western allies to do, is just to walk out? I mean, and especially since the Iranian delegation listened to Secretary Clinton.
All right. So first of all, the NPT review conference happens once every 5 years, and it's tasked with reviewing how well the provisions of the treaty have been implemented and to chart a path forward for any unfinished business in its implementation. It is not the place to resolve issues of noncompliance, be it with Iran or North Korea or any other state. But it is a chance for states to come together and agree on new and stronger rules to shore up the nonproliferation regime, and also to counteract, I think, the bad example that has been set by Iran and North Korea. I was actually at the UN when President Ahmadinejad gave his speech, and I'll tell you that the reaction inside the room is very different than the one that's been portrayed as the reaction from Iran. It was a transparent ploy. It was somewhat a surreal speech, and that you would think that the Iranians didn't know what they were signing up for when they actually acceded to the NPT. And then what I've also heard is that from members of the non-aligned movement, particularly the Egyptians, some of them just kind of shook their head afterwards. You know, he spoke for a long time. It was all very focused on the United States. He took pains not to cite Russia or China and some of the other nuclear weapon states. So I don't actually think that that he achieved anything that was really constructive. I think it was probably more likely seen as a desperate attempt to try to switch tracks of what the conversation was supposed to be about, which is strengthening rules.
It's very interesting. So. It's interesting if we looking at the past of the Iranian president, his some of his public statements, of course, have raised some concern and a lot of commentary. But it was actually Secretary of State Clinton that was really pushing up the rhetoric. The Iranian president was quite mild. Let's listen to what Hillary Clinton had to say, because it seems to me she's mixing apples and oranges here. Let's give her a hear.
Iran is the only country represented in this hall that has been found by the IAEA Board of Governors to be currently in noncompliance with its nuclear safeguards obligations. the only one. It has defied the UN Security Council and the IAEA and placed the future of the non-proliferation regime in jeopardy.
Okay, David, is Iran putting the non-proliferation treaty in jeopardy? Because these are very different things. I mean, it's there are other countries in the world that aren't part of the non-proliferation treaty and get away with all kinds of things, a slap on the wrist from the United States. And Iran's nuclear program is probably the most microscopically washed program in the world. I mean, it's quite easy to see a double standard in play.
Well, I don't see a double standard. I think it's irrefutable what Secretary Clinton said. It was the UN Secretary General that said the onus is on Iran. The whole idea of this treaty is not to have everyone equal by everyone being a nuclear power, but by increasing stability by preventing there being more nuclear powers. So I think that perhaps you might have thought that Secretary Clinton was more forceful because we're all deadened to the rhetoric that the president of Iran says time and time again. He's trying to divert attention away from their noncompliance by finding convenient foes across the ocean.
Okay, well, it's quite interesting, as I think a lot of people would say the United States is just using the same time-honored rhetoric against Iran. If I can go back to you, Professor Morandi, I mean, it looks like that this conference is being used just to get another round of sanctions, get everybody used to the fact that there's this drumbeat against Iran like we've heard for years on end here. I mean, is it going to accomplish anything? Because it seems to me that, you know, they are mixing apples and oranges here. The kind of things that Iran has signed up to is extraordinary. With the IAEA, but of course that's just swept aside.
Well, I think it's a couple of points first. One is that I think anyone who actually watched the speech and the reaction of the audience would disagree with what your other guest said. There was a great deal of applause. The fact is that the Nine Aligned Movement, the organization of the Islamic Conference, these organizations, which represent two-thirds of the countries of the world, have repeatedly backed Iran's position with regards to its nuclear program. So there's no denying that. But more importantly is the fact that the United States has a very irrational hostility towards Iran, and it doesn't only stop at Iran's nuclear program. Anything that has to do with Iran basically is evil. The United States is willing to align itself with the most despotic regimes in the world, in the Middle East and beyond. Yet, for the last 30 years, it has always been extremely hostile towards Iran. The fact remains that Iran has abided by the regulations of the IAEA and the NPT, and the Secretary General of the United Nations, obviously, is someone who is chosen by the UN Security Council, and the permanent members have the most say there. So, obviously, is not going to be independent of the United States and its allies. The facts on the ground, though, show that up to now, The IAEA has never shown or produced any evidence whatsoever to show that Iran's nuclear program is anything but peaceful. And the fact remains that it is for the United States and its allies to prove that it is otherwise. Otherwise, Iran is abiding by international law, and the people of Iran will not allow the Iranian government to give up its sovereignty in any way or form. So I think the best way forward is for the United States and its partners to be more realistic, because if they increase pressure on Iran, obviously the Iranian people will demand that the state, the Iranian government, punish those who hurt the Iranian people in response.
Yeah, Dipti, if I can go back to you in Washington, how do you respond to that irrational hostility towards Iran by the United States? Go right ahead.
I think the interpretation of all of that is actually totally wrong. Iran has violated its legal obligations under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the most recent example being the revelation of the second secret enrichment facility, where they violated a term of their subsidiary agreement. But that's open to interpretation.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but everybody does that. But there are other interpretations of that under the law, how you read the law. I mean, again, it's seems to me that
I don't know who you're citing when you say everybody else does that.
Well, why don't we listen to Mr.
IAEA has said that there's a dispute on this, and that there's a difference in interpretation of the law. This is what the spokesperson of the IAEA said. So I think that that's quite clear.
Okay, and you want to you want
to
finish?
I want to actually come back to another point, which is on the non-aligned movement. You know, I think that this assertion is made time and time again that Iran enjoys the support of the non-aligned movement. I just want to remind your audience of a few facts that, you know, Iran definitely in its strategy does rely on the silent majority support of the non-aligned movement, and at least hoping that they are open to the narrative that they've been spinning for years, that this is all just unfair Western oppression and an attempt to constrain their rights to peaceful uses of nuclear energy. But in the November IAEA Board of Governors vote, the Malaysian representative had voted against the vote of censure. He was recalled by his government for voting wrong. Right. And most recently,
After a short break, we'll continue our discussion on Iran and nuclear nonproliferation. Stay with RT. Crosstalk, I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're talking about the implications of the Iranian president's visit to the U.S. But before, let's see what Russians think about where Russia should stand in the tension between the two countries.
The Iranian nuclear program is high on the agenda of the month-long NPT review conference taking place in New York. Iran is suspected of seeking to manufacture nuclear arms despite claiming its nuclear program is aimed solely at civil purposes. A recent Levada Center poll asked what position Russia should take if tensions between Iran and the United States mushroom into military conflict. 38% of respondents said Moscow should act as a mediator and try to resolve such a conflict peacefully. 24% think Russia would be better off not to get involved at all. Another 23% believe it is better to play off the two and pursue Russia's national interests. And very few think Russia should support any side in a conflict. 4% support Iran and 3% the U.S. Back to you, Peter.
Okay, if I could go to Copenhagen. David, I mean, there's a lot of talk about how the world should deal with nonproliferation and how we should move forward. And the country Israel is always brought up. And, you know, irrespective of how one may feel about Iran and its leadership, it does have a point here that, you know, why don't you make this treaty applicable to everyone if we really want to have a nuclear-free world? And a lot of countries, the major countries, want to see a nuclear-free Middle East. I mean, can this help the NPT really move forward if we get countries like Israel on board?
Well, I think a nuclear-free Middle East is something that's in everyone's interest. I think that there has to be a lot of peace solutions and political settlements before you can think about that. I think that's not necessarily the right question to be asking right now. I think the right question to be asking right now is addressed towards countries that are not fulfilling their obligations. But certainly, we want to do something about proliferation, and we want to try and arrest that. And I think that that's why there is the international focus on Iran right now.
Okay, if I could go to Professor Morandi, I mean, is this a double standard in your mind? I mean, it's always, you know, Israel is always protected by its protectors, the United States, and you know, it didn't sign up to the treaty. Your country did. Many say it's in violation. Others say it's not. I mean, is this a double standard that really should be dismantled for the region?
Well, I think we all know that these are double standards. There always have been double standards. Whenever Israel comes up, this is the wrong question. Israel, of course, has almost 200 nuclear weapons by most accounts, and it has used weapons, started numerous wars against its neighbors. It has targeted civilian targets at a extraordinarily horrific rate in places like Gaza. It has used illegal weapons in its warfare, as in Gaza recently. On the other hand, though, Iran, which does have no weapons of mass destruction, and even during its war, it has never produced weapons of mass destruction. It is interesting that when Iraq invaded Iran, Saddam Hussein was given the technology and the support by Western countries, the United States and the EEC at the time, to produce chemical weapons and use them against Iranians, both civilians and as well as soldiers, and against his own people. Yet the Iranians, in response, they never produce chemical weapons, and until today, there has never been any accusation against Iran that it has produced chemical weapons. So Iran has a very clean slate, and I think this itself is evidence of Iran's intentions. But while Iran has been innocent in the past, it is repeatedly accused of trying to obtain weapons of mass destruction, whereas Western countries have actually provided Iran's antagonists with such weapons.
Okay, Didi, if I go back to you in Washington, I mean, isn't it really, Professor Mirandi has a really good point here. If we can have better application across the board, more transparency on the part of everyone, then it really can help the treaty, because the treaty is hemorrhaging, okay? Well, you give a free pass to Pakistan, you give a free pass to India. I mean, for other countries in the world, I mean, these are just allies of the United States or friends of the United States. So the South Korean example a few years ago, where it was just slapped on the wrist by the major powers, but a country like Iran is just, under siege.
Well, first of all, I think it's important that we make the right distinctions for your listeners. You know, Pakistan, Israel, India aren't party to the treaty, so I don't think it's right to say that the treaty is hemorrhaging because of them. And South Korea conducted laser enrichment experiments that it shouldn't have, and then they dealt with that appropriately. But the question you asked about, you know, getting these states that aren't in the treaty into the treaty, that's something that a lot of people support. And the United States has specifically called on those states to eventually join the treaty. What will happen, hopefully, by the end of the month in New York is an agreement to begin talks on how to develop a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East. And that's something that Israel will need to participate in, as well as other key states in the region. I think that's going to be a key step forward.
Okay, David, if I can go to you, is there the political will for that? Because if the United States can't get Netanyahu to stop building settlements in the West Bank against international law, what is it going to take to get the Israelis to get on board with this treaty? I mean, it seems like a real, you know, it looks like this is really a hope that it can't be realized realistically.
Yeah. Well, let me just quickly go back to the professor in Tehran's comments. It is the leadership in Iran that is threatening Israel's existence, and it is the leadership in Iran that could have civilian use of nuclear power if it wanted it. It wants the issue, it wants the political theater, it doesn't want serious negotiations. And the suggestion that there's some hatred from the United States towards Iran is ridiculous, especially in his city. They say death to the United States, death to the great Satan every day. He failed to mention that.
Okay, Professor Mirandi, I guess I don't have to ask if you want to reply to that.
Well, two things, really. One is that the United States signed a nuclear pact with India, and that was against international law in response to what your first guest said. But in response to what was just now said, I find that extraordinary as well. This is, of course, a very dishonest claim that is repeatedly stated in the Western media. Iran has never threatened Iran with annihilation. Iran has repeatedly said that Israel as a political entity should cease to exist because Palestinians must have the right to return home, just like apartheid South Africa must cease to exist as a political entity. Iran has never made any threat towards Israel in a military sense, and that is something that is constantly repeated despite the fact that people in the West know that this is not true. However, on the other hand, the United States itself has repeatedly threatened Iran with military action. Both the previous president and the current president have constantly said that all options are on the table, which implies that military action could be used against the Iranian people. And more importantly and more disturbing is the recent nuclear posture review, where the United States effectively and theoretically has stated that it can use nuclear weapons against Iran. Because if they deem Iran to be in noncompliance with NPT and so on and so forth under certain conditions. Of course, Iranians know that the United States would never attack Iran with nuclear weapons, but the mere idea, even theoretical, is deeply disturbing, and it has caused a great deal of outrage among Iranians. So while Iran has never threatened Israel, and there's all sorts of outrage in the Western media about something that Iranians have never said or Iranian leaders have never said, on the other hand, when the Americans repeatedly make threats against the Iranian people, the Western media is completely silent, and so are many Western analysts.
Okay, David, what about that? I mean, you know, we hear all the time Israel is making plans, possibly as a contingency plan, to attack Iran. But I don't know, I've ever heard of a contingency plan of Iran attacking Israel. I mean, it is kind of one-sided, isn't it?
Not at all. I think that any country, Israel included, needs to think about its own defense. I think what you've got in this situation is the government in Iran is losing its legitimacy. Its credibility among the population is down, and it's looking for outside enemies. And too often, the United States is brought into this. It's important to point out the drumbeat, as you mentioned, on sanctions is supported by Russia. I think that UN sanctions will be a positive signal.
Well, I think
the community,
again,
the Security
that's
Council
kind of
stands
a broad,
against Iran.
That's kind of a broad brush there. I mean, under certain circumstances, working with the IAEA. Let's be more specific here, because people make these very large generalizations all the time.
No, Peter. I agree with you. I think that there will be my view. I think there will be UN sanctions. I think that they will be weak. They won't be that effective, but it'll be a good political message for people to see that it is the United Nations standing against. And then I think that the United States should follow with more sanctions targeted against the regime, and hopefully not to the disadvantage of the population.
David, since it's been two against one in this debate, Professor Miranda, you can give the last 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I think that obviously any new sanctions will have repercussions for Western countries as well. Iran is a very powerful country, and the Iranian people will demand a response. It's natural. But obviously, the Iranians have been working within the framework of international law. They will continue to do so. And I think further hostility against the Iranian people will do the United States no good. Obviously, the government in Iran is very legitimate. It has the support of the Iranian people. And with regards to the nuclear program, support is almost universal.
All right, so I'm going to have to jump in here.
It would be a grave mistake to miscalculate on the Iranian people.
All right, I want to thank our guests today for being with us here in Copenhagen, in Tehran, and in Washington. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules. We'll be right back.